We get the second hour underway by saying hello to our friend, writer Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
Hey, Kimball.
How are you feeling after your battle with the steps at BC? And by the way, I know those steps. When you posted the picture, I'm like, ow, I really know. I have not gone up multiple times like you, but I've carried big boxes of broadcast equipment up and down those stairs. They're not kind.
Well, were you doing a game at Conte?
Yes. Well, actually, football down there.
Yeah, so they're the stairs right next to there, and like everybody knows them, and I was early into my routine. Not pleased with myself. I wasn't focused enough, and I was doing them two stairs at a time, so the closer you get to the top, you lose more momentum, right? So you're kind of doing these lunges at the end, and I didn't clear my back foot, and I went down. It's funny when you fall, like how quickly you end up on the ground before you like know what happens, right? Like you're actually on the ground before it kind of dawns on you how you got there.
Oh yeah.
So I was a mess. My face was flush against the stone, like you were going to curb stomp me or something, and my shoulder drove straight into it, and there was blood and blood under the fingernails, and it was the type of thing that if someone was watching, they would have come running, and I would have been embarrassed because I don't like that kind of thing. So wasn't a good time.
Well, I hope you're feeling better now.
Well, I'm a Zulu warrior, Kimbo.
That's true.
As punishment for my lack of discipline, I made myself do it 18 times after instead of another 8 because I was so displeased with my performance. And I think that's in keeping with the spirit of a true Zulu warrior.
No question about that. I fell walking the dog the other night because it was dark and I missed a curb. And, of course, as any man would, I blamed the dog.
Yeah, right. I guess you have to. I don't like making a spectacle of myself. That's
right.
Kind of like more of my fault. Like I'm one of those people when people sing happy birthday, like I'm not into that. That makes me really uncomfortable.
Oh, I'm with
this
you.
Kind of thing. And you know me, part of the reason I do this is so I can stay in shape for the young college fillies. And I don't need to see them like watching me like expire on the stairs. I like when they think I'm like a student there. That's what I'm trying to achieve.
Well, and 9 times out of 10, you got them. I'm sure of that. We want to talk today, though, about some horrors of a different kind, appropriate for the season indeed. And we've got 5 delightful ones, all different types this afternoon. But let's start with one of the great classic radio shows of all time. Arch Obler, the folks at Lights Out, were some of the best. You want late night, scare the pants off your stories. There weren't many better than Lights Out. And this episode in particular, which they did at least a couple of times.
They recycled a bunch of them. And that was actually kind of the angle of the show. So Obler is he's sort of the second showrunner. So this is like the second iteration of Lights Out. And it was originally conceived as a way to win the ratings at midnight because it was just music on the air. So this was like the differentiator. You got something different. And it had grisly sound effects. And the episode that we're looking at, Balls Triste, which is, there was a Boris Karloff one that you mentioned earlier that is not surviving now, but it's like, I listened to it again this morning, and it doesn't let in a single ray of sunshine, does it? It's almost like radio torture porn. Like, it's shocking, really, because it's relentless. It doesn't have any mercy on you with the way it goes in this particular plot.
Yeah, and I listened to it last night in bed with the lights out, and I kept thinking, well, it's building, and I'm already on the edge of the bed, but it's going to let me down. Oh, no, not at the end. It was an even bigger ending than I imagined.
Yeah, the plot is that there are these two women, young women, and they rent a boat, and they go across, like, pond or the lake or whatever, and then they end up losing the boat when they go to pick some flowers, and they go into this house, and there's this guy. He's playing the violin. And he says, okay, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to marry one of you, but obviously I'll have an extra. And I'm not looking for an extra. So he plays the whole premise of the episode, right, is the notion of chance, like a flip coin determines so much in your life. So they're like these two guys are like, should we go out looking for them? Let's flip a coin. So the guy in the house, too, he flips the coin over who's going to live or die. And you think, like, when he flips the coin and the person who had already passed out, the woman who had passed out because she couldn't handle it, there's going to be like this let up, this respite. And he's like, oh no, you lost. And he goes and he just kills her. It's like, what? It's just so unmitigating. And then at the end, Obla comes on, he's like, yeah, that was really messed up, wasn't it? It's like, it's not real. Like, these people don't exist. We just did like this really sick thing.
It was great, though. And that's, they did it so very well. And I, you know, we know because we're, I guess we're a little more sophisticated now than folks were 78, 80 years ago. I can't imagine how incredibly scary that must have been listening to that in the late 30s, the early 40s.
We're less sophisticated. We're more inured. And I think that's a big difference, that we're just accustomed to these things. I think if you went up to the average person on the street at the time who was listening to things like this in the dark and using their imagination, you would find that they were much more sophisticated now than that current version of that person who's staring at their phone and not using their imagination. They're not trying to fill up the time in creative ways. They're always going back to the same old, same old. So I think that's important. But Lights Out, it really has held up well. And some, like Inner Sanctum is another program that hasn't held up quite as well. It's a little creaky, but I just, even right from the introduction for Lights Out, when that the voice gnomically says, it is later than you think, I think like that's wise, right? That's like a thing in life. Like, sure, you have time and make the most of it, but it's also, it doesn't stop. That too does not mitigate or let up. And it's just such a aphoristic catchphrase with this wisdom to it. And yeah, it's creepy as all get up, because it just doesn't give you a break. It just does not let you go, and it's relentless, and you just don't really get that in a lot of popular entertainment.
And I love that they tell you essentially, if you can't handle this, you should probably turn off the radio.
Sure, that was also kind of like a Carney trick at the time, though, right?
Right.
You get that with Universal Horror. So this is 1938 that this particular program is. So Universal Horror films, they'd have like the ambulance outside, right? And they'd have nurses on hand for like Frankenstein. And Roger Corman would do things like that. It was like part of the PR shtick. But I think also Obler is somewhat in earnest when he says that, because it's messed up. Like, listening to this again, you think that there's going to be a moment when it's like a dream, or the guys bust in and save these people. And then at the end, it's like, okay, that's all that can happen here. They're sort of in the dark at this guy's house. He's like, not only do I kill and I force you, I like rape Mary, I don't have a face.
Yeah.
he's like this like headless, deformed looking, crazy mutant dude. And it just, it's like, okay. It's weird. That's the middle of the night. What are you supposed to do now? Like, have a warm glass of milk and a carrot and go to bed?
Man. Yeah. All right, let's move on from there. We're talking with Colin Fleming on Downtown to a wonderful short story from Bram Stoker, who did Dracula. This time around, Dracula's ghost. And what's interesting about this is, well, the fact that we don't know exactly who they're talking about, but we suspect it involves Dracula and probably Jonathan Harker.
Yes, I think that's a fair assumption that Dracula's guest, which came out in 1914, so this is, what year did the novel Dracula come out? I think 1897, right? So quite a ways after that, it was like this holdover. And it was actually supposed to be the first chapter of the novel. And publisher excised it, said, you don't need this, pare this away. And so it works as like this strange standalone, I don't even know if you want to call it a story. It's more like a fragment that works, where the unnamed narrator, who we'll just call Harker, is en route to Transylvania. He's not quite there yet. And it's Walpurgis night, and he's going to go out poking around and exploring a bit. He ends up caught in a snowstorm, and he ends up in following, sort of looking for shelter in a graveyard. And there's also lightning during this snowstorm. So that's some bad juju, right? Because have you ever seen that? I think there's like an official weather term for it, that it's like so rare to have lightning when it snows. Like, it happens like only ever so many years. And so there's this woman, she's been staked and she's inside this mausoleum, and the Harker character, he passes out and he sort of comes to, and there's this wolf like orally going to town like on him, not like trying to like to, he's actually sitting on him trying to keep the blood warm so he can like enjoy it like later in nice temperature, which is just such a creepy detail, right? And so someone shows up, drives the wolf off, and Harker goes back to his lodging, and there's like a note from Dracula, right? Because it's so many letters in comprised that this novel, and that's one of the things that makes it such a modernistic work. And Dracula's like, oh yeah, I just wanted to send you a note, DM you, man, let you know that there's like some wolves out and like some bad storms, so be careful. Like he's trying to make it look like he's all innocent, like he doesn't have like dominion over the elements, and he hasn't done all of this to Harker before like he gets to even the castle. So it's a strange fragment, and people tend to know it because it's been anthologized so much. Like, publishers want to cash in on the back of the Dracula name. It's not that long, so it fits into anthologies well.
From there, we move to an interesting story from the Pride of Bowdoin College, Nathaniel Hawthorne. Apparently, this is a story that he told, but never really wrote down. The ghost of Dr. Harris, a peaceful ghost who just wants to read his damn Boston Post and be left alone.
It's a great idea, and it is, like you said, it's almost like a bootleg story, right?
Mm.
Like Shakespeare, a lot of those plays survived because they were bootleg, the same way people would record The Grateful Dead. It was just different technology. So this was a piece that Hawthorne would say orally. And so he's at dinner with some friends, and the woman's like, oh, wow, that's so good. I love this story. Will you write it down? And he did, and it survived. She kept it. It was discovered long after. And it's at not where the Boston Athenaeum is now. It's over in Dorchester. And the Athenaeum is like where you go for quietude and you'd read. And there's this rule in the reading room. And these Athenaeums normally have this rule now that you can't talk. No one can say anything to each other at all. It's almost like shades of Mycroft Holmes, right, in the Diogenes Club. It's almost like an Athenaeum.
Mm.
And so this guy, this old guy, Dr. Harris, who's always there reading the Boston Post, he loves the Boston Post, he dies. And the next day, Hawthorne goes in, and he sees Dr. Harris reading the Boston Post, and there's this great detail, where he's like, he's reading the actual newspaper that lists his death, and he can't go over and talk to this guy and be like, hey, shouldn't you be somewhere else? Because it would violate the rules of the reading room. So he just kind of eyes him all day long for a bunch of months. And this Dr. Harris, he sits by the fire where he normally would sit himself. And he sort of starts to vanish after a while. And he gives Hawthorne this look. It's really quite moving. How sad it is that this guy is not going to be able to have his earthly delight anymore of reading the Boston Post. And we talked about a story where it's like, why didn't I think of that? It's one of those why didn't I think of that type stories. It worked. It's a great idea. The idea is everything. And then, of course, Hawthorne crows. But it's like a to die for idea, really.
From there, we move to 1982 and, well, the start of what became a trilogy of films that feature the never-fail combination of nudity, a power drill, lots of girls, and a pizza delivery guy with no eyes.
Yes, that would be the Slumber Party Massacre. And so it was supposed to be, it really is, I watched it again. It was supposed to be satire, and it was written by a feminist. No, I'm sorry. It was supposed to be like this send-up of these genre films. We had Halloween in 1978 and Friday the 13th in 1980. And this was supposed to be like some sociological, right, cutting type of takedown of that. And the studio producers were like, no, you can have a few laughs, but we need to be drilling some ladies here, right? And I said to my friend, but drilling and drilling. So you have, it gets a little annoying that there are so many, I guess it's like the sort of the genre technique
the subgenre technique of the fake out, right?
Right.
Like, how many times does it happen that someone goes to fix the fuse box in the garage and someone has a meat cleaver? And but you know, there's this guy's only doing what he does with the drill. So it's like, oh no, it's Bobby from the high school who wants to hook up with four of us at once. Like that happens so many times. So like, it happens enough that when people start like being taken out, you're not like, yeah, it's all right. you're not really that bothered by it. It has like the cheesy Casio synthesizer soundtrack, and it's kind of witty. Like it's like I don't even remember the sequels. I'm sure I've seen them. I'm sure they're pretty bad. And I remember another film, Sleepaway Camp Massacre, something like that, where I think someone also had a drill, and then that bad guy was like unmasked at the end, and it turned out to be like a transvestite or something. So these were supposed to be progressive and kind of witty, but also with lots of killing.
Yeah, and we were talking about it yesterday when I think it was around the time I first got HBO, and I think it was on at least every 3 days when I first got my HBO subscription back in the day. Oh, the other trilogy that was spawned from this, the Sorority House Massacre films.
Oh, yeah, I remember them. I remember the cover of the VHS box of that, where it's like a braid of hair. It's like a noose. And for you softcore porn lovers out there, don't fret. They don't make you wait long to get to the nudity.
Oh, no, it's like, no. It's like
the credits, I don't even know if they've stuff like produced by, it's like breasts. Yeah. Like, there they are. all the breasts. And in case you have a favorite girl in the film, don't despair. Just be patient. You'll get to see her, too. Everybody takes a turn.
All right, and from there, we wrap it up by going to children's entertainment. And Casper the Friendly Ghost, who's had quite a life from short films to comic books to television, and that's a franchise that's now been going for about 75 years.
And it was a franchise, too, that one of the co-creators like parted with his rights to it for like $150 and didn't see anything else after that. I remember that episode of Cheers where Klavan, of course, is doing trivia, and he says, what you don't know about Casper is what you don't see because it's off screen. He doesn't have any friends because he's constantly satiating his need for human blood. I thought like that was pretty good by Cliff, because there's actually quite a backlash to the whole Casper franchise, because what animation critics say is that it's very one note. Casper, who originally he's pretty fat. He loses some spectral weight as time goes along, and he loses his horrible New York accent too as things go along. But he's like a chubby kid, and he's not content with scaring people. He wants to be friends with them. And that's really how every single episode goes. And it doesn't really work out. Then he sort of gets them on his side. It's like Rudolph with the reindeer games, and he goes off and he's alienated from everybody, and he kind of finds like a friend for a day or two, and then he's off once more. Kind of sad, actually, in Rudolph. But Casper, he seems to be okay with it. He's just like this transient, spectral friend maker. And they were a staple of my childhood growing up, because like before I went to school, Batman was on, like the 1966 Batman. Then you came home, and it was always like Brady Bunch and Casper, so and Tom and Jerry. So it felt like I saw every single one of these. And, like, really, I can't, like, no episode stands out, because it really is the same thing absolutely every single time.
It came to life for me a bit more when Wendy entered the picture.
Yeah, he has some friends sometimes. Like, there's this one, I forget the dog's name, but, like, this is dog, and he's hunting, and he chases raccoons up trees or something. Something, like, horrific happens to the dog. He's mangled, and he dies. And you're like, that sucks. Then, like, soft edge wipe, cut to the next scene, Casper has a dog. It's this ghost dog now. So it actually worked out really well for him. So sometimes, yeah, he gets a girl, he gets a pet. And now as I'm saying this, and I'm still alone in life, I'm actually like quite depressed, because it works out better for Casper. Like if he visited me, I would be his friend.
Well, there you go. That's it. Well, that's a good place to wrap up for today, covering some ground as we always do with Colin Fleming, who's got a lot going on. Now, maybe next week we can talk about some of the book projects that are, because you got a lot of them happening right now.
Yeah, and I think I've been so dilatory in getting things done. I think Sam Cooke has been pushed back to September, and the story collection's been pushed back to July, and I think a novel comes out like next week or something. But they just send me a box of books, and because of my blackballing, it has no chance. So I don't even really open it, and I try not to think about it. But maybe eventually at some point, well, something eventually at some point will change.
All right, we'll talk next week. Be careful on those steps. You are a Zulu warrior. Never forget it.
All right. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you, Colin. Colin Fleming on Downtown.